Half-truths hold drinks. Gilbert Bernardus, A Halfling Tale. By Lockman, Draig, and publisher Initiative Lore. Read by Lockman. Dedication. To all those who ever exaggerated a story to earn a laugh, a drink, or a second date, and to brewy an ale, if she exist. Preface. There is a tavern at the edge of Borgira, nestled beneath the creaking bones of Scout Bridge in a crumbling corner of the Cricket Warren district. The locals simply call it the Dented Tankard. There are other taverns in Borgira, and there are cleaner ones, but none with more stories, and none with Gilbert Bernardus. The book contains the infamous, contradictory, heartwarming, occasionally drunken tales of one halfling rogue whose height is only outmatched by his audacity, each chapter a story, each story a toast. The following is the complete record of Half-Truths Hold Drinks as heard and passed down by the patrons of the Dented Tankard. Chapter 1. The Wanted Poster for a Beer.
All right, settle down, you lovely collection of misfits, romantics, and people too drunk to leave. This one's about the time I accidentally got engaged to a half-elf named Brewy Ann Ale after posting up a wanted poster for a beer.
Gilbert begins chuckling, the tavern quiets a little, leaning into the story like its warm hearth on a cold night. It began with the wind, not the dramatic kind that howls through the empty canyons or tears at the banners of dying kings. No, this wind was petty, inconvenient, the sort of breeze that steals your last slice of bread or flips your collar just as you're about to talk to someone important. It gusted up Cricket Warren Alley, tangled Gilbert's hair in his eyes, and snatched the last copper he didn't owe someone right out of his palm. Gilbert Bernardus, who at the moment was 3'8", or 4'-2", as he likes to call it, of pure halfling desperation, cursed the breeze with all the eloquence of a starving poet.
"Blasted whisper fart of a sky witch!"
he shouted, leaping after the coin. It clinked and danced along the uneven stones of Scalp Bridge Road before slipping into the gutter's greedy grasp. So it was that our tale did not begin with bravery or love, but with the loss of a single copper coin and the birth of an idea so mad it could only be scribed in ale-starving desperation. Gilbert stood up, brushed off the dirt that never really left his trousers anyway, and rubbed the stubble on his chin. He eyed the alley wall beside him, a canvas of local expression, scribbles, threats, messages for deliveries that never came, and there, between a crude drawing of a goblin's backside and a smudged poster for a missing goat named Glory, inspiration struck.
"Poster space," he whispered.
He dashed off, boots flapping toward the back of Madame Knock's expired meat cart. Knock was long gone, run out of the district for trying to pass off wolf haunches as mutton, but her cart, a broken relic, remained, and more importantly, so did the stack of discarded paper in its rear. Gil rifled through them with the urgency of a bard late for a ballad. The paper was greasy, yellowed, and smelled faintly of onions and regret. Perfect. He took a stick of charcoal from his belt pouch, always keep a writing tool, rule number 4 in the Halfling Code of Improvised Survival, and scrawled the word WANTED, WANTED, at the top in bold, jagged letters. Beneath it he drew a beer bottle, not just any bottle, but one of Ulfgar Ale, the kind with the big, bold shoulders and the tiny embossed boar on the neck. Gil even shaded the condensation, giving it a glisten as if the bottle was sweating seductively in anticipation. And then the final touch.
"Desperately seeking company, and an amber called Ulfgar Ale, and willing."
He stared at it, nodding with satisfaction.
"Now that,"
he muttered,
"is artistry."
A few minutes later, the first poster went up on the wall by the cracked corner of Bellwether and Monk. He used honey as glue, it was all he had left, and pressed it into the wall with such conviction you'd think he was posting a royal decree. And so began the campaign. By mid-morning, Gil had slapped up 5 more posters, one at the back gate of the Worm Seller's stall, another by the outhouse behind Cricket Warren Shrine, a particularly soggy one near the drainage gate where the rats threw dice, a 4th on a crooked pillar next to the boarded-up city notice board, and the last, oh, the crown jewel, right on the guard post walls across from old Vanka's teacup stall.
"Are you allowed to put that there?"
asked a wide-eyed halfling child. Gil gave her a solemn nod.
"By the order of Thirsty Ordinance and any Mugless Morning subsection, if I'm sad, that's the law."
The child blinked slowly.
"I want to be you when I grow up."
"Terrible plan," he replied. "Start with being a goat. Work your way up."
It was just past noon when Gilbreth's work finally paid off. He was sitting on the stoop of Grumble's old books and unused curses, whittling a stick that refused to become anything useful when he heard the boots. Not the kind that hustle, the kind that announce. A trio of guards walked by first, fanning out like they had rehearsed it. Behind them, tall and patient, came the man in white and gold armor, the one with a gaze like weighing scale and a beard like he trimmed it with prayer. General Methus. Gilbreth squinted.
"No, can't be. What's he doing in this part of the Warren?"
He instinctively patted his pockets for anything illegal or mildly suspicious and found, well, everything. The general paused at the most prominent poster, the one across from old Vanka's stall. He didn't laugh. He didn't tear it down. He just stared at it, then turned and walked straight to Gilbreth.
"Master Bernardus,"
said Methus. Gilbreth blinked.
"I think you've confused me for someone with a retirement plan. Did you post this?"
Gil considered the question.
"Did I post it, or was it a manifestation of community yearning expressed through artisanal vandalism?"
"Mr. Bernardus!"
"Yes?"
The general held up a small pouch and let it drop into Gil's hand. It clinked.
"If I buy you a drink, will you stop scaring the locals?"
Gilbreth, with the solemnity of an actor accepting a role, stood up and brushed off his coat.
"Lead the way, Commander."
They didn't go to the dented tankard. Not yet. Instead, General Methus led Gilbreth into a quieter alley toward a modest drinking den called the Gilded Grub. It was the sort of place where soldiers went to forget their orders and criminals went to pretend they were soldiers. The bartender didn't flinch when Methus entered, just raised an eyebrow and began pouring something brown and bitching. Methus gestured for Gil to sit. Gilbreth climbed onto a too-tall stool and tried not to look impressed by the general's posture, polish, and silent command from the room. Methus slid him the drink.
"What are you doing with your life?"
Gilbreth blinked.
"Drinking now. Thank you."
"I'm serious."
"So am I."
The silence that followed was heavy and unyielding. Gilbreth, uncomfortable, reached into his coat and pulled out another copy of the beer poster.
"I thought it had charm."
"You have talent," Methus said slowly. "Not just for trouble, for persuasion, wit, timing, okay? And you waste it."
Gil stared into his mug.
"You sound like my uncle. He sounds like someone who knows what happens to men like you when the stories stop being funny."
Gilbreth didn't respond. Methus stood, placed a single silver coin on the table, and said,
Make better stories.
Then he left. Gil sat there, stunned, staring at the coin.
I'm not lazy. I'm just energy conservant,
he thought. He wanted to dismiss the general's words, wanted to mock the whole exchange, but for once, he couldn't. He drank slowly, thoughtfully, and then, with the coin still in hand, he left the gilded grub. Back into the afternoon sun, back toward the tankard, where fate, or something like it, was about to walk through the door. What Gilbreth didn't realize, not yet anyway, was that when he took that first sip of the Ulfgar ale, something subtle but powerful stirred beneath the surface of the brew. There was a magic to the drink, not the sort that burst into flames or glows in the dark, but the sort that nudges dreams, opens inner doors, and lets the mind wander down paths long unwalked. You see, the Ivory Order had its ways, Methus especially. When he brought that beer and slid it to Gilbreth, he wasn't merely offering refreshment. He was offering a mirror of sorts. Not to reflect who Gil was, but who he might be. The enchantment wasn't malicious. If anything, it was deeply personal. A paladin's prayer for clarity woven into barley and foam. A whisper of a path not yet taken. And Gilbreth, with his chaotic soul and charming mess of regrets, had unknowingly accepted it. At first, the vision began with the beer itself, as Methus had said, but it didn't end there, because beneath Gilbreth's thirst was a hunger for meaning. Beneath his antics was a longing not for ale but for connection. So the mind, fueled by the enchantment, crafted what it thought he needed most. And that's where Brewy and Ale came from. A name born of drink and longing, a woman stitched together by imagination, idealism, and that dangerous kind of hope that only half-believers and true fools can feel in their bones. To Gil, it all felt real. The sunlit entrance, the banter, her laugh, but in truth, he never let that first bar. He was still at the Gilded Grub. The mug still half full, the coin still warm in his hand. He had never made it back to the dented tankard, not yet. And Methus, well, Methus was still sitting at the table across from him, silent, watching, waiting.
What are you doing with your life?
Gil could still hear Methus' words echoing in his mind. You see, the general did this sometimes when lives hung in delicate balance, when one push in either direction might mean the difference between redemption and ruin. He didn't interfere violently, he intervened with vision, and Gilbreth, he was dancing in his own memory, dreaming his way through possibility, because sometimes the greatest truths come wrapped in fictions. And sometimes the most important questions start with a single sip. Methus looked down at his gauntlet where the faintest glimmer of the Order's sigil pulsed. The name Brewy Ann Ale shimmered briefly, then faded. The sign outside the grub flickered for a second. It read, The Dented Tankard. Then as quickly as it changed, it didn't. But don't misunderstand. Brewy Ann Ale is as real as anything else in this world, perhaps more real than most. Real in the way dreams sometimes are, true in their essence if not yet their form. Some say she's a memory from the future, or a song looking for its voice. Others whisper that she's a spirit waiting to be made flesh, or a woman who already exists in some far corner of Wara, unaware that a halfling is sipping toward her across the veil. And perhaps that's the journey, to find her, or to inspire her into being, to awaken her in the heart of someone else, or discover that she was always there, shaped by hope, sharpened by longing. Guarded with names and hopes and feelings and desire. The beer's enchantment didn't show Gilbreth a lie. It showed him a possibility, one he could pursue, or abandon, or believe in so hard that the world itself shifts to make it real. But the Gilded Grub, like any tavern, real or imagined, has its limits. One cannot linger forever in a dream, no matter how sweet the story. If you stay too long, the dream begins to sour, the ale warms, the candle gutters, the nothing creeps in. The nothing. Yes, it's like clear with clear on the other side of it. You can't see it, but you are aware that it is there. It's that quiet dread which consumes the characters who never act, stories that are never told, songs that are never sung, or songs and stories acted and lived, but forgotten. As memories, yes, stories are where memories go whenever they are forgotten. You see, the nothing, it eats at the edges of potential, fed by stagnation, melancholy, and unspoken fear. Usually unspoken fear most of all. The Ivory Order fears it. Yes, even the Ivory Order, and the Shadow knows it. And Methus? He's seen it before. He watches Gilbreth now, silent, as the halfling sways lightly on his stool, eyes blinking through flickers of fantasy. Another sip and he's somewhere else again, somewhere in the cluttered, gleaming shelves of 12th-hand wares, staring at the ring that glows like destiny or madness.
Oh, yeah,
Gilbreth mutters. You see, Gilbreth had heard Methus ask him again.
Gilbreth, what are you doing with your life?
But rather than saying,
I'm drinking a beer, thank you,
he said,
oh yeah, I'm getting engaged.
You see, Methus, aware of the entire situation, or at least part of it, exhales slowly, patient. The journey must continue. And the story turns later on, but before we get there, the drunken tankard was unusually quiet for a mid-afternoon. A streak of golden light painted the wooden floor, flittering through the dusty plains that hadn't been cleaned since the last time someone bet against Gilbreth in a knife game and lost their dignity to the floorboards. Gil pushed open the door. It creaked with a kind of long-suffering familiarity, like a barkeep sighing when you return for one more. He stepped inside, silver coin still in his palm. The place smelled of roasted nuts, spilled dreams, and just a hint of fried potato peels. His usual stool waited, third from the end, where the floor dipped slightly, but the view of the door was perfect. Croach was already polishing mugs that didn't need polishing. The barkeep raised an eyebrow, but said nothing. Gil just raised the coin.
One drink for deep contemplation, or shallow rationalization. Dealer's choice.
Croach poured without asking. The tankard didn't judge. Gil was halfway through his mug when it happened. The door opened. The light spilled in again. But this time, it was like the sun had remembered it was a romantic, and there she stood, brewy and ale, tallish for a half-elf, with hair that curled like secrets and eyes that carried storms and lullabies in equal measure. She stepped into the tavern like someone stepping into their own memory, unaware of the change she left in her wake. Gilbreth's jaw forgot how to hinge. Around him, the chatter dulled as though the very walls turned their attention. Somewhere, a lute string twanged out of tune. Brewy walked up to the bar and said,
Ulfgar ale, tall glass, cold as your ex's heart.
Gil's voice cracked before it formed.
You know Ulfgar?
She turned slowly, lifting an eyebrow.
What? Is this your first time seeing a woman drink a real ale?
No, he managed. Just first time seeing someone order it like it insulted their ancestor.
Croach slid the mug down the counter. Brewy caught it mid-slide, didn't even spill a drop. Gilbreth, heart in throat and possibly halfway to kneeling, blurted,
"Did you see my poster?"
Brewy blinked.
"The one about beer?"
"Yes, that was mine, all mine. Fully conceptual arc, handcrafted ink work.
I brought it here,"
she said simply. Gil's breath caught.
"You... what?"
She reached into her satchel and pulled out a crumpled parchment, edges curled and stained with alley grime and, yes, dignity.
"I thought," she said, "anyone desperate enough to advertise a drink might be interesting enough to mate."
Gilbreth couldn't speak, could only gesture wildly to the empty stool next to him, mouth slightly open like a fish waiting for a blessing. Brewy set, and fate for once stayed for the show. The candlelight dimmed, and Gilbreth swirled what little remained in his mug, eyes still fixed on the door Brewy had exited. A rare silence fell across his unusually buzzing brain, the noise replaced by a warmth that started behind the ribs and slowly filled out the coat. He leaned back, let out a breath, and just let the memory sit. That's when the tavern door creaked open again.
"Wake up, you soggy dream sponge!"
barked a familiar voice. Gilbreth snorted and flinched upright, nearly topping off his stool. Croach stood over him, a wet cloth in one hand and a judging eyebrow in the other.
"You dozed off again and drooled into your mug. If you're going to narrate your own romances out loud, try not to use me as the romantic interest, yeah?"
Gil rubbed his eyes.
"I was daydreaming again. Right! That's what I was doing. Remembering how we met. That's what today is. I'm getting engaged."
Croach scoffed and walked away. Gilbreth blinked rapidly as he returned to the waking world. Around him, the familiar buzz of the tankard returned to focus, and just as the blur of the crowd cleared, the door opened once more. In stepped a figure, clad in layers, scarves, and laughter, a friend, a listener, and perhaps another chapter waiting to unfold, but before anyone could speak, a deep, even voice echoed faintly in Gilbreth's head. Not imagined. Not loud. Just there.
"Gilbreth Benardis,"
it said, deliberate and familiar.
"What are you doing with your life?"
Gilbreth blinked twice, then straightened his vest.
"Oh, right,"
he said aloud, looking around as if the voice had come from behind the bar.
"Right now, I'm getting engaged."
Croach leaned an elbow on the bar and grunted.
"You two want privacy? You better order more drinks. Staring's only free for the first 5 minutes."
Gilbreth blinked twice, then straightened his vest. Once more, Gilbreth, flustered but attempting to remain charming, cleared his throat and slid 2 silver across the counter.
"Start a tab! For destiny!"
Brewy grinned.
"That's either the boldest or dumbest pickup line I've heard in a year."
"Good," Gil said. "I was aiming for both."
The 2 clinked mugs and the tavern exhaled. Conversations resumed, but ears remained tilted toward the unlikely duo at the bar. Gil launched into a tale about fighting off tax collectors with songbirds, and Brewy raised an eyebrow, then 2. But she didn't stop him. In fact, she joined in.
"Oh, please," she said. "If you charm taxmen with birds, I once convinced a drow that I was a lighthouse."
Gil slammed his mug down.
"You're hired!"
"To do what?"
"Whatever this is!"
From a corner table, Thistle whispered it to Lauren. I think we're witnessing a seduction, or a diplomatic negotiation involving strong drink.
Gilbreth didn't hear them. He was too busy watching Bruey toss back the rest of her Ulfgar ale and motion for another.
I have 3 questions, she said. First, do you have any actual skills?
Define skill.
2, why the poster?
Gil hesitated.
Because I didn't want to drink alone. Not that kind of alone. The kind where you forget your own stories.
Rui tilted her head. Her smirk faded into something softer.
And 3,
he swallowed.
What do I call you other than radiant?
She laughed. Not the flirty kind. The kind that knocked bricks loose from your walls.
Bruy, she said. And you're lucky I don't mind a bit of rust around the charm.
They talked for hours. About nothing, about everything. Gil tried 3 times to impress her with sleight of hand and failed all 3 times. She told her, told him, she once dated a man who trained squirrels to attack his enemies. Gil called that both brilliant and terrifying. By sundown, the whole tavern knew 2 things. 1, Gilbreth was smitten. 2, so was Bruy, but she never admit it on the first meeting. When she finally stood, brushing invisible dust from her coat, Gil asked,
"Will I ever see you again?"
"Depends," she said.
"On what?"
"If the next story is better than this one."
She left. Gil watched the door long after it closed.
"Another drink?"
Croach asked. Gilbreth turned to the barkeep, smiling like a man who just gambled his last coin and won a kingdom.
"No,"
he said.
let's find this next story."
That concludes chapter 1 of Half Tales Whole Drinks. A Halfling Tale, Gilbreth Bernardis, read by Lachman, written by Lachman Drake and Initiative Lore.